Yelston, we have a podcast.
Diving deep into all things Texas, both on and off the field. Here's Sean Pendergast.
Welcome
to Utopia.
Everybody, welcome in. It is a Thursday edition. We're recording this earlier than Thursday, but we're running this on Thursday. The guest show for the Utopia Football Podcast. Tuesday's the mailbag. Thursday is the guest edition. And of course, today we've got a great guest lined up for you. Mark Schlereth going to join me here in just a minute on the podcast. I'm Sean Pendergast, one half of Payne and Pendergast in the mornings on Sports Radio 610. You can get a 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on the Odyssey app, or obviously on Sports Radio 610 as well. A lot of stuff to get to here. We're only mere days away from the draft. A reminder to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. The podcast continues to grow. If you haven't subscribed yet, click that subscribe button and you'll get it sent to you automatically anywhere you get your podcasts. And then obviously rating and reviewing the podcast. We love 5-star reviews, but whatever review you want to give always helps the podcast as well. So without further ado, let's bring the man in here on our Thursday guest edition. He, of course, is a 3-time Super Bowl champ. He is part of the morning show on 104.3 The Fan in Denver. He's part of Fox's coverage of the NFL as well. And his Stinkin' Truth podcast will actually be a topic here right off the top. We welcome Mark Schlereth to the Utopia Football Podcast. Mark, we appreciate you joining us. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, man. It's great to be with you, Sean.
Yeah, it's good to have you on. So I mentioned the podcast, and I had a chance to watch it. It looked like the Diggs news broke right as you and Mike Evans were kind of starting in on the podcast. Kind of, it broke at the right at the end of me and Seth of our show. So we had to wait 24 hours to dig into it. But you got to dig into it right away on the podcast. And I know, I'm not sure where everybody falls outside of Houston on this. Obviously, Houston's very excited about it just because of the, it's even more juice that it brings to this offseason. But I know you're pretty skeptical about bringing in Stephon Diggs to this mix. So I wanted to, for this audience, let you just kind of give your take on it. And then obviously some things have transpired since the trade went down with how the Texans are handling Diggs contractually, which I wanted to get into you with. But first, your take on the Diggs trade and adding him to this locker room.
Well, I think that, number one, you look at his last 4 or 5 years in Buffalo. I mean, unbelievably productive. There's no question the guy's got an unreal skill set. And we're talking about 100 catches and 1,400 yards a season and, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11 touchdown catches. So there is huge production consistently over the last 4 or 5 years. So there's no question the guy is just unbelievably talented. But, you know, you always have to ask yourself, with a guy that's that talented and has had that kind of success, why does he wear out his welcome everywhere? Like, what's the issue there? And, you know, I said it on my podcast that, you know, I was talking to Jerome Bettis years ago when we worked together at ESPN, and Jerome said something that has always stuck with me. And his quote is, if everywhere you go, it smells like shit, it's probably you. And that's always something that resonated with me. He was a really good player in Minnesota. They couldn't wait to get rid of him. He's a great player in Buffalo. Eventually, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. And even last year, remember, there was all kinds of issues going on in the offseason. Everybody said, and everybody toes the company line, oh, no, he's great. We don't have a problem. There's no animosity and everything. And then what ends up happening? They end up moving him. And so, you know, listen, he'll probably be on his best behavior and he'll probably be great for a year. I just always worry about locker rooms in general. And I don't know why this is true, but it's true. It just is the way it is. You can have a locker room of nothing but professional football players, like real, like guys who study, guys who prepare, guys who work, guys who do all that stuff. And there's always a faction of guys that are standing on the line between professionalism and knuckleheads. And they're making a decision. Young guys that are going to make a decision of what kind of careers they're going to have and what kind of professionals they're going to be. And one of the things I always said, and I said this to my son when he left college to play professional baseball, just because you play a pro sport doesn't make you a professional. Mm-hmm. There's a difference. And the gravitational pull of all the professionals you have in your locker room and you can have a ton of them in your locker room, is exponentially less than the gravitational pull of the knuckleheads. And I don't know why that is. It just is the way it is. So I always worry about a group of young, influential guys who fall into the culture of a guy that is just so much more talented than everybody else that he doesn't have to work hard. And he can do things that other guys can't do. And I've just seen it happen in locker rooms I've been in. It only takes one or two of those guys to ruin a locker room. And again, I don't understand why that is that way. I guess it speaks to culture, right?
Yeah.
I always say that culture is a lot like irrigation. First off, culture is alive. It's not static. It's living, it's moving, it's breathing, it's doing all those things. And then it becomes very much like irrigation to me. And anybody who's ever, been in lawn care knows those places. I call them hydrophobic places in your lawn that yellow up really fast, that they don't seem to receive water, You don't have that problem in Houston, but we do here in Denver, a place that's really clay compact, hard soil, water just skates over the top, or it's a little higher than the rest of the place and water skates around it. And ultimately water will take the path of least resistance. So you'll have that spot that doesn't get water. And that's like culture. Culture takes the path of least resistance. And if there's an easy way out, that the human nature is to say, well, you mean I don't have to work as hard if I go this route and I can do it this way? And that is true in every organization that you're a part of, whether it's a radio organization or whether it's a football organization. And you get enough of those guys that cheat the system, so to speak. I heard this. I was speaking up at CU the other day and working with the football team at CU. And it was a military guy talked about his dad. This is a great story. He said, my dad would walk down the street and he would correct people. And he goes, as a kid, I would get embarrassed. Like, oh my gosh. Finally, I asked him. He was like, some highfalutin military. I don't know all the ranks, but
yeah,
highfalutin military guy. And his son got the courage to ask him, dad, why do you do this? It's embarrassing. And his dad said this. He goes, because a standard passed by is a new standard set. And I was like, oh shoot. So you pass by a standard in the locker room, that becomes a new standard.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
and
that's
and
excellent.
That scares me. That scares me.
That's really interesting. So who bears the brunt then, Stink, on Stephon Diggs? Like if Stephon Diggs, because the Texans have done a really good job of bringing good guys into this locker room, from the guys they've drafted to the guys they brought in free agency previously to this class of free agents was a dynamite class even before they made the trade for Diggs. They were already winning the offseason. If Diggs is a guy who's kind of teetering in that locker room and you don't know which way he's going to go, who bears the brunt of that in that locker room? Is it C.J. Stroud? Is it the wide receiver room? Is it D'Amico Ryans? Who bears the brunt of that?
I would say first and foremost, it's D'Amico Ryans. And D'Amico's, as you guys know in Houston, D'Amico is one of my favorite people. You don't know this. He's one of my favorite people to meet with, but he is not a good coach, a great coach, and a great mentor. And ultimately, you have to hold Diggs accountable to a standard. And, players have to do that as well. C.J. Stroud has to do that. Like, it becomes everybody's responsibility to a degree to do that. But ultimately, it lies in the head coach. And if you let him pass by whatever standard you have set, then again, you have set a new standard. And you can't allow that to happen. You just flat can't allow that to happen because – I had the chance, the privilege, forget about the chance, the privilege to do several Houston games last year for Fox.
Yeah.
And whether it was C.J. Stroud, who's one of the great young men, forget about football players, one of the great young men in our league. Mm-hmm. He is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I feel the same way about D'Amico. I feel the same way about a lot of the guys. Will Anderson, you want to talk about, like, there's two types of people in this world. People who energize the room when they walk in it and people who energize the room when they walk out. And I want the guys who energize rooms when they walk in. And Will, that kid just lit a room up. And you've got a whole organization full of those type of guys. I mean, those type of guys on your roster. And so I'm just a real big believer in the dynamics of a locker room and the dynamics of, you know, of just the way we sell out and play for one another and the way we're committed to one another. And for me, selfishness has no, it just has no part in a locker room. If you're going to be, if you're going to be a championship caliber football team, which I think the Houston Texans are, selfishness can ruin that in a heartbeat. So I just am very like, listen, can it work? Absolutely. The guy is unbelievably talented, but I think there's an onus on the head coach. I think there's an onus on the quarterback. I think there's an onus on some of the veteran leadership there to say, we're not going to put up with anything less than greatness, and we're not going to put up with selfishness. And so that becomes a guy that I think you have to manage. Maybe not so much in year one, but as you move on, if you move on, I think it's one of those things that you just have to, you know, stay conscious about.
Is the adjustment they made to his contract, which I'm sure you saw, where he had a 4-year deal when he got traded here, and then they just basically ripped up the last 3 years. They were unguaranteed. He had a little bit of guaranteed money in year two. They lumped that into this year, and they basically turned his contract from a 4-year extension into a 1-year, $22 million. You got all your guaranteed money in there, kind of prove it year. Is that almost an admission as to what kind of Diggs is, that they're kind of creating an environment where he almost has to be on his best behavior because he's a free agent after the season? And I'm guessing he's looking at it like, hey, if I ball out, I'm going to get paid even more than I was supposed to get paid in these unguaranteed years.
Yeah, I think it was smart by the organization to do what they did, to make that a 1-year deal. I still have a tough time with paying a receiver $22 million. I know that every position is dependent upon the other positions, but there's no more dependent position in football than wide receiver. Like if the quarterback isn't upright, if the offensive line doesn't do their job, there's a lot of things that go into that to make those guys have success. So I think that was a smart move, lumping it all into 1 year. And like you said, put a prove it year. Mm-hmm. And if he does, you're more than happy to go down that road with him and sign a new deal. But if not, and if there were some issues along the way, then you just say, hey, good riddance. We'll see you around sometime. Hope it works out. But I still look at, the talent that you guys have on the offensive side of the ball. And obviously you had, great production. You'll get Tank Dell back, who was so much fun to watch before he broke his ankle. Just so much talent out there. And it was fun. It was fun to watch your receiving core, your tight end. I thought everybody was pretty amazing. In that offense, especially that passing game.
Well, that's what I want to ask you about next, Stink, is that you played in this system. You played for Mike Shanahan. And the offensive line for the Texans this past season, a lot of injuries, so it's tough to really gauge how they looked in year one. They were so banged up for big parts of the season, and Laremy Tunsil played all year with a knee injury. But they're getting all these guys back healthy now, so let's assume health for the offensive line here. Now it's year two in this system. I've always heard about this system that a lot of stuff takes a year to acclimate, and then year two looks better. What are your thoughts on specifically the Texans offensive line in this system in a second year here with Bobby Slowick?
Well, I think there's a couple things that were interesting to me. So I had asked D'Amico, because I was, as I was studying Houston and getting prepared for the game, there were two distinct kind of conceptual ideas about the way they were going to run the ball. And it became a real tell, which is a real hard thing, for your offensive line, because Singletary was a more of a zone, cutback runner, more fluid, where Pierce is more of a gap, straight downhill duo, that type of runner. And so depending on which guy was in, you already told the defense, if we run the ball, this is what we're running. And so I really believe that to really run the ball effectively in the National Football League, you've got to have an identity in what you do. And that can't change from week to week. Like, I don't like the teams that think they're just going to game plan run every single week, because there's always a nuance to it. So, for instance, hey, this week we're going to be a pin and pull team. Next week we're going to be a wide zone team. The next week we're going to be tight zone. The next week we're going to be counter and power gap schemes.
Yeah.
You know, the issue is every week you look at what somebody does, what their weaknesses are, what plays they gave up, and you say, okay, now we're going to be experts at the gap game. Well, bottom line, if you're not good at running it, you know, or you don't run it a lot, you're not going to be good at exploiting what their weakness is. The other thing is it's not who you are. And so you never get to establish, you know, you never get to establish an identity. The other thing that happens to you is in crunch time situations, like I know the zone game like the back of my hand. I know the gap game like the back of my hand, because my first 6 years in Washington, we were mostly a gap team. You know, when we ran the zone stuff as a, you know, as an adjunct to the stuff we did. Mm-hmm. But the zone game is what we did in Denver for 6 years when we were just running roughshod through the league.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about having an identity is that I don't care what you line up in. It's like the 10,000 hour rule. I've done this so many freaking times that you can line up in anything and there's not going to be a moment of hesitation. And for an offensive line, we're the worst athletes on the football field by far, right? So a moment of hesitation, you lose, because now you get edged. Now you get somebody on your edge. You're not in the proper alignment, or you're not in the proper fit. And now his body is in one hole and your ass is in the other hole, and the back has nowhere to go. And so that is how precise it is, and how important it is to actually have an identity. And because you didn't have backs that could do, you know, you didn't have backs that had the ability to kind of function in one area, it made the Houston Texans run game that much more difficult. And it just made it harder on the offense, harder on the play caller, harder on the O-line. And it made it, frankly, easier for the defense. And then, you know, you think about your inability to marry your, and this is the most important part, if you run the ball exceptionally well, your ability to marry your play action to that run concept is imperative. That's where the San Francisco 49ers absolutely gash people in their play action game, because they're so good at running the football and so good in what they do that they always have, you know, three or four play actions off of that stuff that looks identical. And that's where Houston has to get to. Mm-hmm. And so that running game and having that kind of, you know, having that kind of identity in that run game is exceptionally important.
How does Joe Mixon fit into that? What kind of fit do you think he is? I mean, obviously they were doing similar stuff in Cincinnati. What do you think about his fit here in Houston?
I think his fit is really good. And remember, Joe Mixon, you look at Cincinnati, like Cincinnati will run under center maybe two or three times a game, mm-hmm. tops. So Joe Mixon is running that mid zone that, you know, you don't necessarily run out of gun. You can't really run wide zone because it's an underneath handoff. So it really becomes mid zone. It becomes a tight zone. And so Houston is balanced enough and plays enough under center, and you know, that I think Joe Mixon will absolutely thrive in that running game. And I think he'll be better. The other thing that happens to you in gun runs is, one, it's a total tell to the defense. So if your quarterback is here and your running back is on this side, mm-hmm. well, you're running this way 80% of the time. If it's opposite, this is the quarterback and this is the running back, then we got to go that way. You know, underneath handoff away from where the running back. So defenses just automatically pinch that way and run situations. And it really ends up hurting your running game. The other thing about running out of gun is it takes about 5/10 of a second longer, approximately 4/10. I time it, you know, with my phone. So like, you know, forgive me, but it takes about 0.4 or 0.5 seconds longer for the back to hit the hole than it does if I go under center. Because if I go under center, I get the snap and I'm running to the running back and handing it as he's approaching the line of scrimmage. So it takes literally, 0.4 or 0.5 seconds. Well, I mean, you're asking an offensive lineman who's a lesser athlete than the guy that he's playing against to hold the block for another 0.5 seconds. There's a different entry point level. Did this breakdown on Christian McCaffrey years ago when he was in Carolina, and he averaged, get this, he averaged, now this is one of the best backs that we have in all of football.
Yeah.
He averaged 1 yard per carry more under center than he did out of gun on the entirety of the season. 1 yard per carry.
Wow.
So
that's
there
a ton.
Is, right. There's a big difference between second and seven and second and six.
You got that right, man.
Right. So it just is, it's the things that, as a neurotic ex offensive lineman that drive me crazy. Yeah. Right. So there's certain things I'm just like, you gotta change this. I hate this. So anyhow.
So to put a bow kind of on the Texans offense here, like for you, Stink, what's the biggest thing? I mean, it's hard to find a ton of stuff that CJ Stroud did wrong his rookie year. He was really, really good. But from what you watched of him, what do you think is the biggest adjustment or biggest area of improvement that he can make going from year one to year two?
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I think obviously if they have a great running game or if they improve their running game and they improve their play action, that'll help with some of the, some of the bigger plays, some of the, some of the things that you kind of almost script and you get some wide open throws. But that cat is big time, man. He's a big time player. And his level of maturity is remarkable. And, I'm a huge fan. I love what he did. I love the way they played. And I tell you what they added on the defensive side of the ball, that rotation on the defensive side of the ball, they got what I think are two of the best football players in the National Football League in a position where I already thought they were really strong with Will Anderson and obviously Grenard, who ended up going to the Vikings. But Danelle Hunter is as good as it gets in this league. The guy's he's a freak show. Just effort and just toughness, and for a guy that's svelte and built that way, he is unbelievably powerful at the point of attack, and that dude can rush the passer. And then Danico Autry from the Tennessee Titans. I know that nobody gets to watch the Tennessee Titans because they're kind of a regional team, and you guys probably don't see him in Houston. But Danico Autry is a phenomenal, not a good. He's a phenomenal football player who also can rotate in from defensive end into D tackle in nickel situations. So it puts another really good pass rusher over a guard, which, I'm telling on myself here, but most of us guards are not the most, not the most polished of pass protectors. So they're frightening, man. They've got some players.
We've seen some of Danico. Obviously, we see the Titans twice a year in the division, and then he was with the Colts before that, as you know, twice. Mm-hmm. We had Nick Caserio, Seth and I did. Seth and I have Nick on probably once every 3 weeks or so on our show in Houston, once a month thereabouts. And so we had him on right after free agency. And it was interesting because he talked in kind of cautious GM tones about a lot of the guys, even Danielle Hunter. He was very complimentary of all of them. But when we brought up Danico Autry, literally within 10 seconds, he called him a badass, a bad MF-er, a junkyard dog, and someone you want in a dark alley with you. It was like one of those, it's like a punch in the face for us. Like he's being coy on everybody. And then Danico Autry sounded like he's like the next action hero or something like that.
I'm going to tell you, he's one of those, and Tennessee had a couple of them. Jeffrey Simmons is one of those too. Like I always kind of go by, who provides me with the most rewindable moments?
Yeah.
Like that dude's a rewindable dude. Like you watch him do some things. Cause first off, like he probably is statistically, he's 7-8 sacks. I don't know what he is. Like, like that's where he sits or whatever. But you know, I created my own analytic on my radio show, and I call it my boo rating, B-O-O. And that's balls over opponent. It's the only analytic I give a crap about. And that dude's balls are bigger than your balls. I mean, he just absolutely thunder punches people. I mean, he hits people like on, you know, when they do split flow stuff. So they're running like a zone run run play to the right. You know,
yeah.
And then the tight end comes across and tries to bust up the defensive end. Like tight ends tiptoe across the formation because they're like, this dude is going to come down and try to shorten my neck. And he, like, he destroys people at the point of attack. It like, to the point where it's cringeworthy from, like, oh,
yeah.
Like, rewind that. Oh, gosh, that had to hurt. I've seen him do it to tight ends and fullbacks in the backfield that are loading on him, you know, where they're cutting off.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, he probably has more just violent – collisions than just about anybody you watch on film. And so he's a dude that I think fits right in. And I thought that way about Grenard last year. I felt that way about Will Anderson, man. Those dudes are frightening. Like the way they, you know, collapse things, the way they take on blockers, the, you know, the way that they, you know, set edges. I thought you guys were as good as any team I watched in the league at setting edges. And that, you know, that goes back to D'Amico Ryans and what he demands of his defense. But you got, there's a couple of guys there. I like Al Shire too, where they signed Al Shire. Can that dude, you know, when he was in San Francisco, he was a constant backup rotational guy in there. And he started a lot too, you know, but that dude can run and he can, I mean, he flies and he hits people. And you guys did a great job. Oh, the kid from the Jaguars too.
Fatakasi.
How do you say his? Yeah. Oh, Fatakasi.
Yeah.
there was a couple of games I watched of Jackson. I don't know who I was doing, but you know, I always kind of break down their last three games and that dude, you want to talk about setting a new line of scrimmage. There was a couple games where he was just absolutely destroying offensive guards. So, yeah, I just with what they have on defense and the way their offense is set, man, it just feels like the Houston Texans are, you know, are building a championship caliber football team for, you know, for whatever that window is, which seems to be really long because the quarterback is so young. It seems like they're building a long-term championship type of window that's opening up for them.
Yeah, they're really, I mean, they're taking advantage of CJ Stroud's contract being super cheap. That's for sure. I wanted to ask you, they've still got some cap space that looks like it's going to be used for something. Cause that contract you and I were talking about with Stephon Diggs, it's on paper, it's a 1-year deal, but they did all that stuff with voidable years where they shove some of the money into the future, like a credit card. So the Texans still have 20 to 25 million in cap space that people are wondering, all right, you know, what's next in this offseason of fireworks? And a name that gets brought up by a lot of our listeners is Justin Simmons, most recently of the Denver Broncos, who you obviously cover on a daily basis there. And I guess just if you give us a thumbnail sketch just on what exactly Justin Simmons is at this point, and if a team has a need at safety. The Texans have Jalen Petrie, who didn't play all that well last year in his second year, and then Jimmy Ward, who's a good player, but he's hurt all the time. Bringing in one of these veteran safeties that's out there might make sense, but I think the feeling is Justin Simmons may still be looking, he may still be on the pricey side. I guess just give us your thumbnail sketch on Simmons.
Well, first off, Jimmy Ward's a great player. And he's a guy that can go back down and play nickel too. So he does a great job with that kind of stuff. So it gives you some versatility. Simmons is a really good player. Simmons is, he's got great range. He's, you know, probably a leader in interceptions since, I don't know, the last 4 or 5 years in the league.
Yeah.
He's a great community guy. He would be a great fit from a personality standpoint. And he's suffering from what I call the Fangio effect. And the Fangio effect is, if you remember a couple of years ago, nobody wanted to play nickel in the league anymore. Everybody wanted to move to safety because, you know, it goes back to the Seattle Seahawks, I think, where they were playing that match cover three and you had to have that middle eraser guy, right? Because they have Cam Chancellor coming down and just trying to just kill people, right? And they had Earl Thomas just erasing mistakes in the back end. And so that became a very valuable position. And they started getting paid $15, $16 million bucks a year to play that position. Well, now all of a sudden in the last 4 or 5 years, you know, and I got this and I just have thought about this. Kyle Shanahan told me several years ago, it's the Fangio effect, that everybody is playing the Fangio, you know, shell defense. And therefore, you know, it's all about keeping the ball in front of you. It's all about making the offense, you know, check it down, throw the underneath stuff. And so now all of a sudden that middle of the field eraser is no longer a needed guy. So you saw the safety market just get absolutely collapsed, right? Everybody just dumped their safeties. and it's because of Vic Fangio. Everybody's playing that Vic Fangio style of defense. And so for Justin, Justin be a great one. Justin's going to have to come to grips probably at after his ninth season. I think he's going into his 10th year, that you're not getting $15 million a year most likely anymore. So, you know, I think Kevin Byard, who signed with Chicago, signed for, like, he was a $15 million a year guy that signed for $7.5 million a year, like a two-year deal. And so for Justin, I think for him, it's he'll be in shape, he'll train. He's, like I said, he's one of the great people in this league. He really is, which to me fits completely with what I know about the Houston Texans organization and the time I've spent with you guys. And he's going to sit and wait till after the draft and see what the best fit for him is that gives him the best chance to be a playoff contender and a Super Bowl contender, because let's face it. And, you know, he got drafted here in Denver in 2016.
Yeah.
And they went 9-7 that year. And they haven't had a winning season in all his years in Denver with Pro Bowls and all pro. And so, that'd be a great fit for him. But I just feel like he's shuffling his feet, waiting till after the draft to see what aligns best for him, and where his best chance to compete for the playoffs and potentially a Super Bowl is.
Hey, last thing, Stink, before I cut you loose, what do you expect from the Broncos on draft night next week? I know they're one of the teams that's talked about as a possibility to move up and get a quarterback, with letting Russell Wilson go. There's all sorts of moving parts going on here right now. What's your crystal ball tell you right now?
I don't think there's any quarterback in college that's worth giving up 3 first-round draft choices for. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and listen, man, I love a known commodity over an unknown commodity, and most, you know, 50% of the first rounders are essentially busts anyhow.
Yep.
But what first round picks do for you is they give you salary certainty. It's why you guys are thriving right now, why you're able to sign Danielle Hunter, and why you're able to sign, you know, Denico Autry, and why you're able to sign Stephon Diggs, is because your quarterback's not making any money. You know, Will Anderson's, you know, not making any money. You got a lot of guys that aren't getting paid right now. And that's what first round draft choices do for you. Mm-hmm. It's salary certainty for at least 3 years, you know, before you go in to renegotiate with those guys if they play exceptionally well. If not, you know, it's 4 or 5 years. So salary certainty is important. I just don't think there's any quarterback worth moving up for. And the college game, like the college game does not help most of these guys. It just doesn't. The college game is, you know, it's so far outside the numbers. It's four wide. You don't ever get into four wides in the professional game. It just doesn't happen. But the college game is based out of four wides. That's your base formation. It's 10 personnel, one back and four wide receivers, no tight ends. So, like, it's just a different game. And so I don't know that anybody's worth moving up for. Me personally, with all the capital they've given up for not only Russell Wilson, that was an absolute bust, but also the capital they gave up for Sean Payton, I'd much rather see them trade back, accumulate picks, and start building this roster, because the odds are you're going to stink anyhow. Mm-hmm. You know, the Chargers got Jim Harbaugh. They've got a quarterback. The Kansas City Chiefs have just won back-to-back championships, looking like they may be the first team ever to three-peat. The Raiders, you haven't beaten the Raiders in eight straight losses to the Raiders. So 4 years you haven't beaten the Raiders. Like, the odds are you're not going to be any good. So I'd rather trade back and accumulate and try to start building. You've already said, hey, man, we're in a rebuilding process. You've said that by eating $52 million of the 84 that you owe Russ. So start your rebuilding project. And chasing a quarterback that may or may not work out, doesn't seem like something that they should do or they should be involved with. So that's the direction I would go. Again, I have no inside information on that. I'm so sick of talking about the draft, by the way. I just want it to happen. Like you guys nailed your two first yeah. rounders last year, but you nailed a bunch of other picks as well. You got a bunch of guys that are you know, that have gone out and performed really well for the franchise. So it's fun when that happens. I think the Broncos right now from the 2018, 2019, and 2020 draft. Okay, that should be the core of your football team.
Yes.
They've got one player left from those wow. three drafts.
Wow.
Second rounder Cortland Sutton. Nobody That's else it. Is on this team.
Wow.
18, 19, and 20. One player.
I think the Texans only have one, and it's Titus Howard. That's it.
Yeah.
They just have one.
And that's why the Texans were so bad for so long.
That's exactly right. And, no, they hit a royal flush in last year's draft. You know what I mean? Like, that ain't happening for everybody, you know?
Right. And so it just becomes, you know, it becomes such an imperative part of the game. And, you know, unfortunately, when it comes to draft, so many people are, you know, so many teams fall victim to analyzing and evaluating talent as opposed to football ability.
Yeah.
You know, and I always say this, you know, football is easy for football players. It's really hard, you know, for athletes.
Yes.
And I like it, man. I want a football player, number one, that happens to be a talented athlete. But talented athletes don't become great football players.
That's right.
They just don't. There's yep. There's a big difference. And so, unfortunately, there's a lot of organizations that, you know, that operate on height, weight, and speed. And that's a great way to get yourself fired or have a team that there's a reason. There's a reason that Arizona Cardinals are always drafting the top 10 or the Jets are always drafting the top 10 because they don't do it right. That's why.
Yeah. No question. The man they call Stink, Mark Schlereth, 104.3 The Fan in Denver, of course, part of Fox's awesome NFL coverage. And then the Stink and Truth podcast, which I'm assuming, Stink, they can get anywhere you get your podcast. And I know it's also on YouTube because that's where I saw you guys talking about Stephon yeah. Diggs last week.
Yeah, anywhere. You know, it's on the Odyssey, but you can get it anywhere. And then, on YouTube as well, which we're having some fun with that. And it's really grown. And so it's been fun. I got a great one of my I used to do a leftovers podcast every, I think, Thursday after the game I called. So I got a couple of great leftover podcasts from the Houston Texans when I called their games. If you ever want to go back and listen to some of the things that I was thinking about and some of the things that I talked to D'Amico or to, you know, CJ Stroud about that maybe didn't make the broadcast, they're in there.
Which do you remember which games you were on last year, who they were playing?
I know I did a Saints game.
Okay, week six. Yep.
Yeah, I did two games in Houston. Man, they all, you know, I think, did they play the Raiders? No.
Were you guys on the Steeler game in week four by any chance?
No, I don't think we were on that game.
Okay, but I remember the Saints. I'll Google. We'll find it.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and look. But I did a couple of games. Maybe one on the road and one in Houston. And okay. I know the one in Houston was the Saints game.
Okay.
And it was because it was the first interception, right? The first interception that CJ Stroud threw was against it. And I was doing that game. So I'm kind of the jinxy cat there.
First interception he threw, but they got the ball right back because Titus Howard forced a fumble on the return.
Correct.
And you lose the football.
Right. Yeah, right. So anyhow, it was all good. It's a pleasure, man. Sean,
yeah, me too.
Good to be with you guys.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, appreciate you, Stink, very much. Appreciate you, and best of luck with everything. And we'll be talking down the road, I'm sure. I'll tell all your cronies here in Houston because there's a line of people from 104.3 The Fan in Denver here in Houston, and I keep in touch with all of them. So I'll be sure to send along your regards.
You do that, man. I appreciate you. Take care, and tell Seth. Don't make me come down to Houston and open a can of whoop ass on him.
I'm on it. I'll text him in five minutes. See you, Stink.
All right. Sounds good.
All right, good stuff. Thanks. The great Mark Schlereth joining me here on the Utopia Football Podcast. All right, we went way longer than I promised. I said, stink, maybe 15 or 20 minutes. We go 40 minutes with the guy. So good stuff with Mark Schlereth. Hope you enjoyed that conversation. Again, a reminder of a few things coming up here. As this runs on Thursday of this week, we've got two podcasts next week, obviously, but also a reminder for you Texan fans, we've got the uniform reveal on Tuesday, which will be happening on social media, and then the party Tuesday night. If you're coming to that, if you were able to win tickets to that, then be sure to say hello to me if you see me there. And then the draft party, I may be out there and I might be carrying my championship belt with me. I got a Texans championship belt that I unveiled on social media. That might be its first public appearance out at the draft party on Friday. So hope to see you all out there as well. A reminder, if you want to email the show, houmailbag@gmail.com, houmailbag@gmail.com. Subscribe, rate, review. We appreciate you doing all three of those things, subscribing, rating, and reviewing. So big thanks to Mark Schlereth. For Anthony Irwin, my producer, I'm Sean Pendergast. We're out of time. We will see all of you next week on Utopia Football.